Welcome back, folks. I'm here with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt and you at 410-319-8888. The first caller up is Sergeant Freeman. We also have Michael on the line. We're going to come to both your calls here. And one of the things that Kimberly said to me during the break was that Hillary Clinton should not even be in this place at this moment.
Not at all. This should not be a contest, especially if we're looking at just the sheer resumes between the two candidates. One of these resumes should have been put in the trash a long time ago. But we're here because, unfortunately, Hillary Clinton has her own set of character flaws, or she is seen as a flawed candidate in many ways. And that makes people say, we need to look for something else. And Donald Trump happens to be that something else. And Donald Trump has been that something else for us for now a year. Because he is the non-politician. I mean, he was able to run through the primary for the RNC because everyone else were considered the established traditional politicians. And here he was as that, you know, new game in town that was so different than everyone else that folks were like, we got to go to the extreme. And he's risen to the top.
And you also said, quickly during the break, we were talking about when we talked about Hillary Clinton saying, and Sergeant Freeman, we'll come right to your call here, but I want to get this out so you all can comment back to us at 410-319-8888 or talk@steinershow.org by email or tweet us at Mark Steiner, is that I said that when Hillary Clinton made the suggestion that...
The basket of deplorables.
Deplorables, right? And I said she shouldn't have backed away from that, and you said she shouldn't have ever said it.
Yes, she shouldn't have ever said it, because for me, it then meant she was playing Trump's game. She was playing his style of campaigning, which, again, looking at the two candidates, she never should have to do this. And I think she is feeling like she's in a pinch and needs to make sure people understand how different she is than Trump. But at the same time, her willingness to make such a statement and then back away from it makes her look like a continuous flawed candidate. And so she really should have just never decided to play his game.
And yeah, because she does throw these one-liners that about Trump that are kind of attacking him.
Yes.
As opposed to kind of taking the high road and really pushing the campaign forward. And maybe, you know, I have two mixed emotions about this. I've been reading a lot of stuff that people say about the deplorable comment. And there are a lot of folks, especially people who are involved in the anti-racist work, people who are in the black community, people in other communities, are saying she was right. She shouldn't back away from that comment because they are deplorable. They are racist. They hate black people. They do not like the browning of America. That's real. And then on the other hand, you can say that Hillary Clinton should be saying we have to address racism in America, not just calling him out for being a racist, Donald Trump, but addressing the depth of racism in America.
And I agree with everything that you just said. That's the piece that she should be dealing with, which means that's the high road. The low road is to come up with the basket of deplorables. And the low road, if anyone has to take that, should be some of her supporters so that the attention goes towards them and not her as the candidate. This is the person that we are saying two of these people will be the president of the United States. Both of them need to act like that. And right now we're not seeing that from either one of them because of her willingness to make certain comments that takes her to the level of a Trump. We seem to be very irritated by some of his actions and certainly outraged by some of his comments. But for her to come back and offer a comment that seems like something he himself would say means that she's playing his game and not her own.
Which is why I think that you see in the polls that Clinton, the latest poll coming out, which is an amalgamation of a number of polls from CNN, that she has 43% of the support. He has 41.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Johnson, Libertarian, has a 9. I said his name, George, earlier. Gary Johnson, 9%. And Jill Stein, Green Party candidate, at 3. I think that's why you're seeing this. And you're also seeing the other parts of this poll that are saying, and then we're going to open the phones right here, that are saying things... that 67% think Trump is risky, but think he will be a change candidate, and she won't.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are very confused about this. There's a lot of people who want to talk about this. Let's go to the phones and see what they say. 410-319-8888. Sergeant Freeman, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi to your guest. I'm military. I think you might know that.
Yes, you call in your retired Army sergeant, right?
Let's get it correct. I'm Air Force.
I'm sorry, man. I know this inside the service. I understand the difference. So I'm sorry.
And that's an E6. That means I was a technical sergeant.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And there were quite a number of Air Force. It was actually an Air Force Reserve convention there, and I can speak to that in a second, but I think it was totally disrespectful for Donald Trump to come to Baltimore, and essentially, as I spoke to a lot of reservists later, they were kind of put off on the fact that he just brought up the rhetoric from generally CNN or Fox or anything else like that in regard to the tit-for-tat conversation that goes on between the two candidates. So it really didn't dive into some of the veterans' issues, per se. And I spoke with a few, and they said, well, he was only on stage for a few minutes, and it really didn't make a difference to them. Although it seemed sort of bipartisan when he got claps in response, it seems like it was when he, you know, he was ready to, you know, say what he had to say. So that's kind of contradictory. But also, I agree with your guest. I made observations when I was there, and in fact, and I stood on the side of the Trump supporters. And I was just observing the type of things that were going on, and I saw signs and T-shirts that said Hillary in prison because the White House is too black. I saw signs. I saw one guy was just totally in a somewhat of a uniform saying, invent more bombs so Trump can just press the button. I mean, nuclear bombs is what he said, and things of that nature. And I was, and it was the type of individuals that I saw were race bait type of individuals, if you will. I mean, they were very dogmatic in their approach of being there. And it seems to me it was a floor show that travels with the Trump organization, because they were set up that way with the T-shirts and the buttons and the things of that nature. And the police ran off one of the guys that's local. You could tell he was local. And he was selling Clinton buttons, and he was selling Trump paraphernalia.
Making some money.
Yeah, he's just making some money. So what happened was the police ran him off.
Uh-huh.
Because the Trump people said he's selling Clinton's paraphernalia over there.
Right,
and they ran him off and said, well, you don't have
that's
a license.
Crazy.
So
right.
I said, well, I'm sure they just came to our town. And I'm sure they don't have license, but that's another story.
Right, so,
but on the, and I know you have to go, but on the other side of the fence, when people had, in fact, Sean was down there, but they were not so much Clinton supporters; they just weren't Trump supporters.
Right.
I mean, they just didn't want his rhetoric there,
right.
And coming to our town, and then some of the comments that I just heard your reporter getting from some of the Trump people, he's not interested in placing jobs here in Baltimore or any other city. He doesn't have that kind of clout that he can do such a thing, as if he can call Under Armour or Amazon and say,
right.
You know, create these jobs and do that. That's a local situation. I always tell people, if you want to change that light bulb out there on the traffic light, you have to get involved in local politics. And I don't hear any kind of conversations in regard to, you know, local politics and midterm elections and who's going to be in the Senate and the House of Representatives, because that's the major issue. And when you speak about a vote, I control 25 to 100 votes myself personally because people listen to me. And I think if when people say your vote counts, no, you have more than that, because we all have family members. And we all have our opinions that sway general other people about
right.
our opinions.
Sergeant, I appreciate the call. I mean, I think what you said is very relevant and really important. And I think that a lot of the people out there who were demonstrating against Trump that day were not necessarily for
that's
Hillary,
right.
but that...
That's right. And that speaks mounds, again,
right?
In terms of sheer resumes, this should be so simple for voters, but it's not. It's a lot more complex because they do realize the two candidates they are having to choose from are very flawed for very different reasons, but still very much flawed, and it makes their decision very difficult. So you then have Trump come to town, a town like Baltimore, and what he draws are clearly those who are supportive of him and then those who are anti-Trump supporters, but not necessarily Hillary Clinton supporters.
And you saw it by people saying just F Trump as a slogan. It was really John's position that Valerie pointed out to me. I was interested in what I thought about. She was saying you had the pro-Trump supporters singing the national anthem, and you had the anti-Trump protesters going F Trump. And that also theatrically sets things up in people's minds.
Absolutely.
And I mean, maybe I'm getting old, but I had a problem with it. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Michael, you're on the air. Welcome.
Everyone.
Michael, good morning.
I just wanted to say that I don't know Donald Trump's history like a lot of people do. In the beginning, when I know the Clintons and the Trumps were very close before this. They were good friends. And I kind of had a crazy idea that Trump was in this to help Hillary. You know, if he was running against her, then people would say, oh, no, we're going for Hillary. But this guy is off. You know, I have to say he's off. The voters that he is collecting is the people in this country that do nothing but hate. And that's his basis right there. Okay, you have some people, you know, were disappointed that Bernie lost, and they are turning their attention to Trump instead of Hillary. This is one time when we have to choose one devil over another devil. And the best devil, I hate to say, is Hillary. You know, that's my personal opinion. Also, I have to wonder how the election would be if Bernie would have won instead of Hillary.
Right. You said a number of things. No. Let's get into a couple of things you said. And before we get to our next callers, we're going to get to all of you. People just hung up. Come back. Don't hang up. We're going to get your calls. Mark, you're the next caller up at 410-319-8888. And Stephen, we come to you as well. But I think that, first of all, Trump, the relationship between Trump and Clintons, I mean, they travel in some of the same worlds. I wouldn't call them best friends, though it is true that their children are close.
Mm, that's true.
Right? And they travel in those circles. But I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do, you know, I do think that one thing that Hillary said about Trump supporters is correct, though she doesn't have a very good analysis about it. There are a lot of people in this country who, look, racism runs deep in America. It just runs in the bone of this country. And for some, it runs even deeper.
Deeper than the bone?
No, deeper in the bone.
Okay.
Deeper in the bone. Down into the center of the marrow.
Okay, that's pretty deep.
But it runs deep, and I think that it expresses itself in this frustration. I think that a lot of working class white Americans do feel left out of this country. They feel, and part of it's racist, but part of it's not. Part of it is that the life they led has been sucked out of them, they think because of everyone else, but it really is because of the way this capitalist system has managed.
It's corporate America.
Which has destroyed people's economic existence. And so people can exploit that in a very racist way, which Trump is doing.
And then when you look at who leads the country and the fact that that is a man that does not look like you, it then becomes a very easy scapegoat for you.
Right.
And it helps people to fuel even further that frustration and angst and anxiety and anger to say, we've got to do this different. And when you think about Trump as a candidate, he doesn't look like a modern day John Wayne, but he certainly embodies what people think of as that quintessential white male that is a frontiersman. I'm going the distance. I can make this happen for you. Just give me access to do so for you, and I will accomplish all that you are asking me to do. And if you think about it, that's what his stump speeches sound like. So there's no level of depth or insight. I remember your producer, Imani Spence, calling me last week when we were doing the show, and she said, you know, I think we'll also decide to explore aspects of Trump's immigration policy. And I wrote back to her, and I said, well, tell me what that is, and then I'll be able to talk about it. So, I mean, and that's fairly consistent that Trump hasn't given us that level of detail about anything that he actually wants to do while in office, but he is at least projecting for us that he can do. And as long as he can give us that that personified experience of what the rugged cowboy will do when he gets to that spot of being able to control any situation, then that works for a number of us as Americans. And that's why Trump is so popular among a number of people, in particular that so-called silent majority that we're speaking of now.
Right. And I think it just shows that I think that how race has always been allowed to divide America, especially movements when they're on the cusp of change. And I think I was reading an article by Bob Zellner, which we hopefully I have him on the air with us in the next week, who was one of the white guys back in the day who helped form the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. But then he was a Mississippi guy who came from a Klan family. Mm. And he organized among white folks. He has a really great article about the what is going on and how we have to think of this thing in a different way. That I think that if things were done in a different way, if Clinton was doing things in a different way, if Bernie Sanders perhaps is running right now, that some of that white vote, white working class vote, would be siphoned off away from Trump because a different argument can be made. And that's the healing process that Hillary should be doing to pull people together to say we have to do this in a different way. Mm. But we're not going to hold our breath for that, which is part of her problem.
Exactly.
410-319-8888. We're going to go to Stephen, Margaret, and Quam in that order. So stay with us, Stephen. And that's the order in which you called in. So, Stephen, you're on the air.
Yeah. So a couple of things. She said exactly what she just said about half of the Trump supporters being disaffected, poor, you know, people that have been marginalized by corporate America, and then the other half being in the basket of deplorables. And the basket was not just racist. It was xenophobes, sexist, and, you know, everything that Steve King is, you know, everything that I think he should name these people. I think she should name them, you know, call them out who they are. We already have David Duke on that list. And it helps the media, to me, in my mind, because these people, MSNBC, CNN, they haven't been able to call these people out themselves. So they need her to be able to lead them towards who are these people in the basket of deplorables, you know, because they're not going to go after them themselves. So somebody has to do it. Also, she had Humans of New York. I don't know if you all look at that Facebook page, but she was on the Facebook page. She gave an explanation that was kind of humanizing her about when she first took the entrance exam for law school, and it was her and a couple other women, and she was being berated by, I would guess, a room that was 90% male, and she was being berated right before the exam by some of the men in there about her being a woman in this room. And I think that the sexist aspect of things is where many of us fear a greater violence. You know, race is definitely going to play has played a role. Especially during the Obama presidency, but over this next—I mean, goodness—we not only did they choose a xenophobic racist, but they chose someone who clearly hates women as the leader of the Republican Party at this time, and it's so disheartening and scary on that front, and it's something that a lot of us just have to deal with on our own in our own personal lives, but also it's going to be reflected in our politics as well. So I'm just wondering what you guys think of it.
Stephen, I appreciate the thoughtful comments. I mean, I think what you said about the gender is a big issue here. And I've read some articles this morning where people are saying gender is not the issue for her. We elected a black president, so gender really isn't the issue. But I think that the depth of misogyny in America, the depth of our feeling about women being bees when they try to run a business or be their boss, or it's all wrapped up in that stuff. And I think that And I think that this does affect this race.
Yes. I mean, there's no question that gender plays a role. We just find our ways. We just find ways to talk about Hillary Clinton's candidacy and other aspects. So we focus on the emails. We focus on, you know, her so-called hiding her health status. I mean, all of these are very much issues that I think some voters are interested in. But I also think it just becomes another way to raise questions about why a woman can't really do this job and do it well.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Join us with your thoughts. Let's go back to the phones. And 410-319-8888, Margaret, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Margaret.
I'm calling regarding because I keep hearing about the fact that they keep saying that Donald Trump is not a political, he doesn't have this political background, he's not this. Do you all remember Ross Perot?
Certainly do.
Yep.
Ross Perot was not a so-called political whatever, but he came with all these so-called pipe dreams and goodie bags, what he was going to be able to do because he was such a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even hear anything about Ross Perot at all. Because you don't know whether or not if he's alive or is he dead or what. But it's just, and number two, the fact that here Trump is running on him for himself. What about all the local within each state, far as the politicians? He may get in the White House, but who will control the House and the Senate?
Those are really all good questions, you know. And I think that the Ross Perot thing is really an interesting analogy you just made, Margaret. I mean, I think people who don't remember Ross Perot, I mean, Ross Perot, he's still with us, as far as I know. He's 82 years old, I think.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, he's still with us. But he did run. I mean, he ran a very effective campaign in many ways, similar to Donald Trump, though I think. And he was a true conservative businessman, not a fake one. And he wasn't a reality star. And he did appeal to some of the same conservative strain. Look, conservative politics in America is huge. The idea, I mean, it is an American invention in some ways. This kind of conservatism, and he represented that. Trump is not a conservative.
No.
Right?
Right.
He's not a conservative. Ross Perot was a true conservative. And during that election, I mean, this, since you raised that, Margaret, before we have to go to break here and come back, and Quan, you're the next caller up when we come back from break, so please don't go away. We're going to just take a quick news break and come back. But just to remind you that it was Bill Clinton. Well, let me tell you this when we come back. Who raised racist issues in that campaign, not Ross Perot. We'll be back. 410-319-8888. Stay with us and join us with your ideas about this campaign. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Associate Professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics, and Africana Communities. Co-host and guest host here on the Mark Steiner Show. 410-319-8888 is the number as we are looking at this presidential campaign. We're going to talk about the polls. I'm going to give you a little bit about Ross Perot, as I said, before we went to break. Quam, you're going to be the next caller. We're coming right to your thoughts. 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. But I do want to hear what you're thinking. 410-319-8888. Now, Ross Perot, for those who don't know, was a conservative businessman, an oil man, who ran against Bush and Clinton.
Right, as an independent.
As an independent.
Yes.
And won a huge...
Not a pretend Republican.
Not a pretend, and a true conservative. And won a huge chunk of the vote in some ways that probably allowed Clinton to win that election. But he actually, when you think about him, did less race stoking than Clinton himself. Remember, this is the campaign where Clinton made that comment about Sister Soldier,
mm-hmm.
because she came out and it was protecting people who were rebelling in the streets, and he called her out on that, and he criticized her deeply. And he also, at that point, when he was governor, saw the execution of a man named Ricky Ray Rector,
mm-hmm.
who was mentally incapacitated,
mm-hmm.
a black man who had murdered a police officer. And so there were a lot of things. He stoked the fires, even though he, at that point, was supposed to be the cool president.
The
first black president, because he wore sunglasses and played the saxophone or Arsenio Hall. So, I mean, that's the complexity of race constantly through the stream of our world. And I think that Ross Perot, the Clinton election, says a lot about that. I'm glad you brought that up, Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
410-319-8888, your thoughts and ideas. Kwame, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm calling in because I turned the radio on and I heard a few callers and a young lady who's hosting there with you.
Dr. Kimberly Moffitt.
He said young. Yeah, that's all that matters.
yeah, but I heard her and a few callers mention that we only had two choices. Something of the fact that we're choosing between the lesser of two evils. And coincidentally, you just mentioned Ross Perot right before I came on. But I'm just wondering, why is nobody mentioning Jill Stein? We have... Obviously, it's almost common knowledge now that the powers that be have put Hillary and Donald Trump in the position they're in right now. It's obvious that the powers that be want one of those two to win because they're both working in corporate interests. But Jill Stein is for the people. I mean, if you look at her platform, I mean, she's even for reparations. I mean, that's and no black people even know about her. So I just like a little insight as to why the black community or just the people in general aren't rallying behind Jill Stein. And if your answer is going to be she doesn't have a chance, then we'll never have a chance if all we're going to do is choose between bad and worse. So I'll hang up and listen.
Kwame, you raised mm-hmm. a good issue. Now, first, let me just say, I don't know if you heard, I mean, earlier this week we had Ajamo Baraka on, who is the Green Party's vice presidential candidate.
Mm.
Jill Stein has been on the show twice since in this election. She'll be back on this election. So we do cover the Green Party here. The Green Party local candidates are on this program as well. So, I mean, and we're inviting the presidential candidate from the Libertarian Party to join us as well. So, I mean, it's important. I think all four of them should be sitting on the platform when the debates take place for America to really see what's going on. So I'm a supporter of that. But what were you going to say, Kimberly?
No, I was just going to actually affirm what the caller was saying, because I think he is exactly right that it is a need for us to move away from this two-party system, believing that those are our only options. But like with anything, you know, it's become very much a part of American society and its politics that we only think very clearly about those two parties without stretching ourselves out to say, but there has to be other options. And he's also right that typically the response is they have not a chance, and so people don't give them the fair attention that's necessary to help move us in another direction.
And I think the reason that when we talk about why Jill Stein is only at 4% from the last poll, I mean, and why she has not made a lot of headway in the black community, it's a complex thing. But I think it also has to do with why Bernie Sanders had a hard time getting a majority of the African-American vote as well. And I think it's not a simple thing. I would like to see third and fourth parties in this country that are really strong, that advocate positions from libertarian to really progressive positions on the left that really make a difference in America. We need that. I completely believe we need that. But part of it is that, look, most people in America, whether we like it or not, want to be part of the mainstream. I don't care if you're black or if you're Mexican-American or Puerto Rican-American or whoever you may be in America, you want to be part of the mainstream. And the Democratic Party in 1970 became the home where people in the black community, in many Latino communities, in the gay and lesbian community, women found where they had a voice and some modicum of power.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason. And I think that, but you're seeing, there was an interesting article in the New York Times about young black voters and young eligible black voters not liking the Democrats. There's a shift
mm-hmm.
among younger people. And it's a I mean, to me, it's a very complex thing about how people vote and why they vote, and we've never been able to build a really truly strong progressive coalition in this country of black folks and white workers and other people to kind of fight for a kind of progressive platform. It's always been difficult to get that off the ground in America.
And I think some of the what you're seeing with millennials in particular is a greater sense of distrust of the two-party system that we have invested so much into, and recognizing that we hear the rhetoric of both of these parties of what they want to do, but when we see it manifested in society, it doesn't seem to speak or resonate with them. And that's why you're hearing people, that's why you saw so many millennials supporting Bernie Sanders,
right,
and his particular platform. And the same thing in terms of why you see or notice people defecting away from being such strong supporters for Hillary Clinton.
And I think that's one of the reasons Hillary Clinton is so nervous, because millennials are either voting for Jill Stein or Libertarian, or they are not voting.
Not voting at all.
And I think that that has got the Hillary Clinton campaign very nervous about this election. I mean, so who are you voting for and why? We'd like to know. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org by email. Or tweet us at Mark Steiner. I really want to hear what you're thinking about this campaign and why you're voting the way you are voting. And I think there are a lot of people that's obviously in our audience who are Jill Stein and Green supporters. There are a lot of folks in this audience who support all the candidates. I want to hear why and what you think. I mean, this poll, new poll was interesting. So first of all, the polls said, the New York Times CBS poll, when they asked the question, is Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump honest and trustworthy? The response was Hillary Clinton, 33% said yes. She was honest and trustworthy. 35% of voters said yes for Trump. 63% said no for Clinton, and 60% for Trump. So, you know, how would you answer that question? Right? Who has the right kind of temperament and personality to be a good president? This is an interesting juxtaposition. 55% said Hillary Clinton. Only 31% said Trump. So there's contradictions in those numbers. So what do they mean to you, right? Does Hillary Clinton share your values? Only 40% said yes. Does Donald Trump share your values? Only 35% said yes. Who could bring about real change in the way things are done in Washington? Here you go again. 36% said Hillary. 48% said Donald Trump.
He's a change candidate.
So,
no, I mean, people look at, you know, that silent majority we were talking about earlier, those who feel like they've been left out of for participation and access to how we function as a country, they are seeing him as their Barack Obama of 2008. Essentially, that's what we're seeing right now. Not in the same overwhelming majority like you did in 2008. And some of that has to do with the rhetoric of Trump, where people may quietly want to see radical change and something so different, but they also don't want to be associated with the rhetoric that he is espousing.
So, folks, what do you think? 410-319-8888. Let's go back to the phones here. Now, it's interesting that we could talk about Ajamu Baraka and his thoughts about Obama and this campaign. He said on the show, when we talked about his comment that he thought President Barack Obama was Uncle Tom and the servant of white money and power. You can talk about that as well. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Robert. You're on the air. Welcome.
Well, you seem like you're just getting to the point I'm going to ask. I'm hoping to get to the Jill Stein thing I heard is happening today.
All right. It's this evening, I think. It's 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Right.
And I kind of also want to encourage people and African-Americans, but not only African-Americans, to consider alternatives to the party system in a more progressive direction. And I think there is a generational shift. One thing I did discover, for example, is that Bernie Sanders actually did get 42% of the black youth vote.
Right. Yes, he did.
Yeah, so, right. I mean, that may be a possibility we can look at. It's going to take some time. I'm not dumb now.
I know you're not.
It's not going to be president. But we got to begin moving. In other words, we'll never get there if we keep saying, well, she ain't going to win, therefore I'll vote for Hillary or even though due to Don Trump. We are going to have to start thinking outside of the box, as the old overused saying goes. So anyway, I'm planning, if I can, to be at her the Jill Stein thing. And I hope that a number of African Americans and others, especially young people, take a look at that. A colleague just sent me an email about it. It's in the 400 block of North Howard Street.
Right.
About, was it 5 or 6 or something like that?
I can get you the exact address in a minute. I'm looking it up now. But go ahead, yeah, finish what you were saying before we go back to the phones.
Yeah, so that's just basically, I think we need to start looking at alternatives outside the Democratic Party. And, of course, I'm advocating progressive ones, not right-wing ones.
Really?
Yeah. That's about all I have to say.
All right, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, no, I think that the I don't think Jill Stein is going to get more than her 4%. Maybe she'll get 5% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that that's what she's going to end up getting. And I think there are many arguments we've made here. Many of my friends who voted for Sanders and who are, I know, are very kind of radically on the left. I talked, many of them are voting for Hillary. Part of the reason they're voting for Hillary is because they're terrified of the racist forces that Donald Trump is unleashing on America and what that could mean.
But what they also should be concerned about is on November 9th, what does that mean? Because they don't go away. What Donald Trump has pulled the Band-Aid off and revealed to us in terms of that festering sore that's been there for so long, that's not going, we can't just put another Band-Aid on it and think that it disappears. I mean, it's here, and I don't know if it will be as quiet as a birther movement or a Tea Party movement of 2008 and 2012. I think it will look very different, and that's something that we should be concerned about.
Well, that seems to be a birther movement. That was interesting. They came out with this. Trump came out, the Republicans came out saying, no, Barack Obama was born in the United States. Thank you for acknowledging that. But and trying to blame Hillary Clinton for starting it when actually Trump was one of the founders of the birther movement.
Yes,
in this
yes. He was very vocal about it and felt like it was a part of his mission to be the one to reveal that the president was in fact not born in this country and as a result would then be illegitimately holding the position of the president's.
But we have a lot of callers. Let's go back to them, shall we? 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner. You know, that sore your guest was speaking of, it has always been there. It just found itself a voice. It's been manifesting itself through all the social ills, racial injustice, poverty, and all of that. So the sore was always operating. It just found a voice in Donald Trump. When you look at Bernie Sanders and Jill Stein, the media is the culprit of that. You balkanize the millennials, calling, you know, sort of suggesting that they were young and naive and didn't know what they wanted. So you kind of created a youth divide between their age group and, you know, people my age. And I'm a 65-year-old millennial, Okay.
This depends which millennium we're talking about.
and the media was responsible for that. Mainstream thought was projected down into this political campaign by the elitists. Bernie Sanders did not get word for word on the airways as Hillary Clinton did. Dr. Jill Stein did not get the same thing. The game was rigged by the elitists of mainstream from the start, you know, because they have an interest to report. That filters down through mainstream professors, religious leaders, all the way down the line, Mr. Steiner. So you have to attack, you know, that the game is rigged.
Well, it's rigged. Well, let's talk a bit about that for a moment. Then we'll go back to the phone. We mean that the game is rigged. I mean, the establishment press always covers the establishment. That's what they cover. But this election around Sanders, I mean, Sanders, if we're saying more millennials, other people didn't vote for Sanders because of the mainstream press, then people are not paying attention to the election themselves because Sanders was all over the place.
Yes.
I mean, I just, you can't put it all there. I mean, is that part of the problem? I think it is, but I don't think it's the whole problem. It's not at the foot of the press entirely. I think. But I hear what you're saying as a 65-year-old millennial. 410, really do. Thanks for calling, Clarence. 410-319-8888. Let us go to Judy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Mark. How are you this morning?
Very well. Good morning.
I so agree with the last caller. I think I'm a 60-year-old millennial. and the thing that I want to point out is, you know, we keep talking about Hillary Clinton is so somehow when she gets in there, she's going to be somewhat innocuous. The woman's for the TPP, which basically turns over the control of a lot of state laws to corporate power. She's taken a lot of money from Wall Street giving speeches before this election came up, and nobody even, she doesn't tell you what she talked to them about, but we can all guess. There's a lot of pay for play that's coming out in her emails, even though people want to say, let's make the emails go away. There's a big pile of minutia underneath of the Clinton Foundation where there's actually papers that show it was made, it was their license to operate was pulled in New York and they kept taking money. And so what my concern is once she does get into, if she does get into office, and I think that both candidates are not flawed. I think they're really, really bad candidates, and they were known bad before they even got into office. People know who these two people are who are at the top. So I do think they were placed there, and I called in the show.
What do you mean placed there? What does that mean?
I think that the fact that the DNC actively worked against Bernie Sanders as a candidate means that for some reason, the people in power were working to make sure, as Hillary kept saying, it's her turn. She was furious when Barack Obama got the nomination because she kept saying, it's my turn, it's my turn. I don't understand the concept of turn and how that comes up in a political process supposed to be democratic.
Okay.
So the fact that she even has that in her mind means that she's referring to something else when she keeps saying that, and she said it on a number of occasions. And then the second thing with her is, I'm afraid we're going to end up back with impeachment trials from day one. There's so much dirt on her that should be questioned and should be have been vetted before she even became a candidate. That was sort of swept under the rug. But if the Republicans have the Congress and she's the president, I think we're going to be choked down with years and years of investigation, and that's going to just paralyze the country even more. I think it's going to be a mess.
Judy, I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. It may, in fact, be a mess. I think that, though, we may see the Senate switch hands. We've not really talked about that much in this program, but lately we will. I mean, the Senate looks like it could be shifting towards the Democrats, and I think the Republicans will lose seats in the House, though they'll retain the House, is my guess, just a political guess where that's going. 410-319-8888. John, you're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Ironically, I think Donald Trump might be the best thing if he's elected for progressive politics in this country.
I know that, yeah.
Because if you get away with, if you do away with affirmative action, which makes no sense today with our diverse society, then working people of whatever race and gender maybe can unite to elect their, to vote in their best interest and work in their best interest across racial and gender lines. And basically, that's just a thought that occurred to me. And thank you very much.
Thank you. What do you think, Kimberly?
I don't have a response.
Damn.
Yes, that's quite possible.
I think it would be just the opposite. I mean, I think that that I know there's a philosophy saying you elect the worst person and they'll create a reaction to that.
Yeah.
But I think there could also be a huge reaction on the among the truly racist people in this country. That will feel emboldened,
yes,
and empowered,
yes,
and have license to do what they want. I think that's the biggest fear I have. And I said it very bluntly. I'm not usually this partisan during election conversations, but that I'm not saying vote for Hillary, but I'm saying that I think that he represents some very dangerous forces in America that we have to be aware of, and it would be, I think I would be remiss not to say that.
Yes, and November 9th will reveal some of that to us. And I just think again, I think some of this is very naive on our part to believe that it's as simple as, you know, an election taking place on the 8th, and then we hit a reset button and we return to business as usual. That there will be, regardless of who that candidate that wins on November 9th, there will still be some percolating of people in their camps believing that there's something else that has to be done and must be done as a result of the outcome of the election.
Let's go to Terry. Terry, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mark and Kimberly.
Good morning.
I have a couple of things here. This is definitely a complex election. I think we will all agree with that. However, I am a Democrat. I am 45, and I've been a single parent for 14 years. However, people do want to change. I want to change. I want to see a change. I want to see, you know, the majority of the middle-class family economically stable and, you know, be able to financially support their homes and households, you know, and provide a future for their children. So why saying that, you know, I think it's okay for Democrats to vote Republican, and I was open for that change this election. However, I will not vote for this Republican candidate. If there was a different Republican candidate that had more conservative views and values and was more transparent, because this seems to be, transparency seems to be a big issue that the GOP is lurking on and about with the DNC and Hillary Clinton, but he hasn't been transparent on just as many things as Hillary Clinton. And yes, we are working with the lesser two evils.
So who are you going to vote for, Terry?
So I'm gonna vote for Hillary Clinton. Being as though, you know, I feel like she's more qualified. To me, I look at it as if someone's applying for a job interview.
All right.
You're gonna go with the one who's more skilled and trained, and you know, be able to make those decisions when it's time to be made, and not saying that the decisions that anyone
right.
makes is always the right decision, but they have to be able to make the best decision.
Terry,
you know,
I'm sorry I have to jump in. I do apologize. We do have to take a break here. You had a very clear thought, and I really appreciate you calling in and bringing that thought to the airwaves. And I wish we could get to the rest of the callers, but we can't. We have to take a break here and come up with our next segment. I want to thank Dr. Kimberly Moffitt once again for being with us in the studio. Always good to have you here, Kimberly.
Thank you.
We should make a habit of this. It's always good. Take a short break. We're going to come back, talk about an amazing production taking place in Baltimore of The Elephant Man. Don't go away.